Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
So, hello and welcome to Business Matters, this week with Colin Bradshaw, Professor of Management Practice, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined by my special guest, Vanessa Afonja, who has an estate agency business, but I will get her to talk about that in a second. So, Vanessa, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
My absolute pleasure. Tell us first of all, so what is it that you do and how did you get into it?
Okay, so I am the founder and owner director of an estate agency, as Colin said, called VA Property Consultants. And the VA is literally my initials. And I started the business in 2008. And to be honest, it was a home-based business when I started. My background was through, I graduated a long time ago and I did business and marketing. So I did nothing to do with property for my academics. And I worked in London. Once I graduated, I worked in London for about 10 years, always in a commercial aspect. So I worked with big media companies, always selling, involved in marketing. So it was very much sort of always a people-facing type business. And property was a personal interest. It was a personal interest that I had. And I fell into it, if I'm honest, when I started to look to buy my own first house. And that's literally how I got into the property market, through buying my own property. And I just found that through that transaction, I was more and more interested in, you know, how it worked, the different people that were related to the market. And I just picked it up from there, started reading, did a few online courses, did a few professional courses, and just started to develop my own professional knowledge in the property sector back then. There was no business then. And I think I got to the point, I was still working in London, I got to the point where I felt that, and we moved to Luton, we bought a house in Luton, so that's how we ended up here. I'm from London originally. So I bought a property in Luton, followed the transaction through. My husband was pretty rubbish.
tell it like it is, Vanessa.
Yeah,
tell us the truth.
He was pretty rubbish with the details. So I read the contracts, understood the terms, dealt with the agents, and I was interested. Right. And that's when I started to equip myself to understand how an estate agency business would work. So fast forward a couple of years, just kind of in and out of research, I literally just decided that I would set up my own. I would do my own thing. I would leave my day job in London, which was a big step at the time because that was a good job with lots of perks. But I thought that it was time to do my own thing and I would make it work. So it was good that I had my family behind me. So I set up VA 2007, really, I set it up. And I set that up in my study at home, in my bedroom, literally. Didn't know what to call it, so I called it VA.
Why not?
Tagged the word property consultant. And at that time, it was when the property estate market was actually going down.
Well, I was going to ask you about
it. It was actually going down.
2008.
Yeah.
Looking back on it now, it was an interesting time to start such a business.
Yeah.
What would you comment on that?
Yeah, it was probably a stupid time. It probably wasn't a very good time because the property market was going down. That's when the house prices had peaked some years before that, so the prices had gone up and all of a sudden the prices were crashing, the mortgage market was falling, people couldn't get mortgages, so it was all going down. And I thought I'd start a business to go up. So because the house price market was crashing, what I decided at the time was I would get into property, but because the property sales market and the estate market was pretty tricky, I would get into the rental side of things because renting is always consistent and stable.
Yep.
So I started off by looking at lettings, so basically renting out properties for people who already had them because that market was there and it was stable. And like I said, I started from home. It was just myself. And I did a business plan.
Yep.
I think I got a template from back then. You had these government companies that were set up to help you with your business plan. They keep changing their names.
And was that so? That's the .gov.uk.
Yeah, you have a lot of these.
I was going to ask about, because you mentioned before you did a lot of courses and professional knowledge, and I think particularly for the people who might be interested in starting their own business.
Okay.
What was that process like for you? Because obviously you had a degree in business and marketing. Yep. You had worked for some big companies down in London, but obviously as you've described, it's a big step for you to then move to, you know, being the founder and your own boss, but also your own employee.
Yeah.
So what was that process like and what did you have to learn and go through to start the business up?
I think I did a lot of it I did online. So I did a lot of general reading about, you know, what it takes to be a small startup. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of government initiatives out there, a lot of websites that help you when you want to set up as a small business. We had a family accountant, so I spoke to an accountant about the sort of more paperwork side of it, the accountability side of it. But a lot of it was... A lot of reading, and obviously through university I'd picked up quite a few things from uni, so but a lot of it was online research based, and I spoke to a few other small business owners.
Right.
And since it was just going to be myself initially, I didn't have to worry too much about the whole company set up. So initially I was just a sole trader.
Right.
So you can just set yourself up as a sole trader. Back then I wasn't a registered limited company at first. Had the name, went to company's house, registered the name of company's house so I could trade under the name VA.
Yeah.
And literally, like I said, got a business plan template from a government resource online, which sort of just talked about what you're doing, how you're going to do it, who you're going to target, how much money do you need to set up, and sort of followed a step-by-step template of a business plan. It wasn't, I did a lot of research, to be fair. I knew the Luton market. I knew about business, and I think I just sort of just jumping. I probably wouldn't recommend that route to anybody now, but I thought I was just jumping with my business plan template and just have a feel for the market.
Well, let's just have a look at it then, because obviously, as you say, 2007, 2008, the market was starting to turn against you somewhat.
Yeah.
But you went out and you started this business on your own as a sole trader, and you did that. And for the benefit of the people here in the room and the listeners. You said just then that you probably wouldn't recommend it, but actually there's a lot of people who would say you actually did the right thing. You can't dabble, you can't play, you need to commit 100%. So would you say that was true?
It is true. I mean, initially I probably tell a bit of a white lie. Initially I was still working in London, so I dropped my days in London. So I was working full time. Yes, I had a transition period of about 18 months.
Okay.
So where I went part-time in London, I was fortunate to be able to go part-time in London. So I was working 3 days in London, which left me 2 days to dedicate to the home business. So there was a transition period because it takes a lot, and financially you need to have because the customers don't come for a while. So there was a transition period where I was part-time, and I'd recommend that to anyone if you know, when you're starting up small, if you can transition.
So talk us through the timings on that. So you said before that customers don't necessarily come along that quickly, but from day one, let's say, when you made that decision to go part-time, there was an 18-month transition, but how long was it, would you say, that until you got the turnover and the revenue stream from the business to a place where you wanted it to be? Was that happened by 18 months, or did it take longer than that to kind of come through?
It definitely took longer than that. Still waiting now. Still waiting. That's an ongoing process. That's an ongoing process.
Let me ask you, are you turning over what you want to turn over now?
No.
Is that okay?
No, definitely not. Okay. So that's an ongoing process, but I think within 18 months of the transition from working in London to doing my own thing, the early signs were there.
Okay.
You know, it was beginning to happen. Within a year, I had someone working with me part-time at home doing the administration and the phone calls. So at some point, you've just got to take take that leap of faith, really.
And as part of that business plan, did you have a set of revenue projections? So were you pretty nailed to an income flow that you wanted to achieve as you went through and made that decision to kind of transition 100% into the new role?
In a way, I mean, I'd set targets, so I knew exactly by, you know, the first quarter what, you know, how many clients I would need to have got under our belt to be hitting a certain level of money, quarter two. So I looked at it in quarterly periods. It didn't quite work that way, but I had the figures planned out. And obviously I had to invest in. So before I even sort of stepped into it full time, I had to figure out what the investment would need to keep it going until the clientele built up in terms of the marketing, the sales tools that I would need. So I had the investment plan, and then I had obviously what I'd want to bring in to cover the investment and then some, but the two didn't quite come together.
So, turn a second to talk about where the business is today, but just before we do that, because you've given us a lot of very good facts and experiences there around setting business. I just want to ask for anybody here in the room, is anybody thinking about setting up your own business? Is anybody actually considering this? So what do you think you'll do?
Well, I'm not quite sure what I want to do right now. Start up a cup company, for example.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's something like that, but you're not sure what exactly.
Yes, I'm not really
your own
sure
business.
You've been told that entrepreneurship is about risk taking, and if you're willing to take risks, you'll be able to.
So the comment for the folks listening on the radio who may not pick that up was that a couple of people are thinking about starting up their own business, still in the early days, I think, from what you've just said.
Yeah.
But actually, the comment specifically was entrepreneurship is around risk-taking.
Yeah.
So actually, Vanessa, can I ask you, do you feel like you took a big risk, or actually did it feel like a natural progression?
I do feel like I took a big risk initially, because I eventually, when I left my full-time, when I went from full-time to part-time and then part-time to the business, mm-hmm. I left behind a big salary and company car and lots of travel. So yeah, I took a big risk financially, because if it didn't work, then mm-hmm. I'd have to kind of go back on myself. And then, but there was a natural progression to it. And I think you've just, for me, you know, it's, you've just got to do it, really. Yeah. You know, you've sort of in and out, it's never going to happen. So you just have to, obviously you've got to be smart. You've got to have your objectives. You've got to know who you're targeting. You've got to have certain things mapped out. You can't just jump in with your eyes open or your eyes closed, rather. You need to know where you're going. But yes, at some point you just need to go and just take that risk and do it.
And looking back on it now, clearly it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Definitely.
Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
So let me ask about the business today then. So you obviously described the process of setting up and that transition. But describe to me, you know, the type of properties that you deal with today, what your typical kind of client or customer looks like, etc.
Okay, so the business today, so from fast forward from 2008-09 to 2016, so me on my own, the business today, I employ 6 people. We have 2 offices, one right in the mall, one's outside Debenhams. We have, it looks like a kiosk, and that was an idea that I started a few years ago, and we transitioned into an office in the mall last year, which was quite unique in October, which is a huge marketing thing for us. And then we have another office on Castle Street, mm-hmm. which is just here in town by Matalan. So fast forward to the business today, 6 people later, it's become more and more challenging, because once you grow and you have employees and you have all sorts of other things that are going on, there are lots of other dynamics that sort of take you away from what you actually want to spend your time doing, which is sales and marketing. Mm-hmm. Clientele, in terms of the business itself, initially we were just doing rentals, like I said. We started off just in the lettings, and that went on up until just last year. Last year we then transitioned from being a lettings agency only to an estate agency, so now we're doing letting and selling houses. Okay. So the business has sort of grown into different departments, grown into 2 different offices, and the kind of clients that we represent on the rental side, we obviously work for homeowners who are looking to keep their investment, so rent it out to tenants. We generally service what we call the accidental lifestyle landlord, because mm-hmm. there are different types of investors out there. You'll have investors who will have portfolios of houses, 50 houses, 100 houses, 200 houses. They're set up quite differently, and they do things on their own, and they use us agencies for things here and there. But when I set up VA back then, it was to appeal to landlords who were like just myself, like everyday people who happened to have a second property but didn't have the time or the expertise or the confidence to manage it and sort it out themselves.
Because that was underserved?
Yeah.
You'd seen that?
I think so. It was underserved, and the companies who do serve that market, or who did serve that market, I didn't feel they did it very well. The customer service wasn't great. You know, you were sort of like a number in and out of your property, whereas mm-hmm. I felt that people, because it's quite a scary thing renting your property out. It's mm-hmm. a very legal process. So I would take my time and select tenants carefully, give people a lot of my time. And people like that one-to-one personal service. And I just found that through that route, we would get lots of referrals for similar types of landlords. So we turned out to, so in the end, we made up this phrase that we service accidental lifestyle landlords. So that's anyone just like you and me who has anything from one property to maybe 6 or 7. But it's not their full-time day job. They have a family, they have a job, they have businesses, and then they have their property. And that's the sort of landlord that we geared ourselves towards. So our marketing was all geared at that type of landlord. And that sort of landlord pays more because they want value, they want service. And that's kind of how we started to go down that route.
You saw a very clear niche in terms of that market proposition that wasn't being served at all, or wasn't being served very well.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting lesson for, you know, anybody thinking about setting up their own business. You got a very clear idea.
Yeah.
But interestingly, it was quite different. I mean, it's still in estate agency and rentals, but actually you'd identified a market area where you thought successfully, clearly, that they weren't being served terribly well.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting lesson.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me ask you something. You mentioned before about accidental landlords, etc. But obviously the business model you've just described there is very much around personal service and doing things. But you've also said that you've now got 6 people. So I'm just curious to know, A, how much of your time is actually now spent managing people mm-hmm. as opposed to doing that kind of sales and marketing, talking with clients, whatever you like. And how do you find that actually that ethos of you know, being the best people for the accidental landlord. How do you kind of make sure that that's replicated six times across the six members of staff that you have?
Yeah, very hard. Very, very hard. It's difficult. I mean, when I was doing everything myself, not that I'm perfect by any means, but when I was doing everything myself, I think the difference is you could assure the quality that was going out to the market. So once people get involved, then it becomes diluted, then you get mistakes, you have drama, and you have all sorts of customer service. So that's when things like the training, policies, templates, standards, so what I found myself doing and what I do a lot now is just setting up the framework. So I sort of set up a framework to say, this is VA, this is how we operate, this is how we represent, this is the minimum level of customer service that we give out, so that when someone joins us, then we train to that level, and I monitor them and I shadow them for a long time. So it is difficult because you have to entrust other people to do it, hopefully do it your way, and everybody's way is slightly different. So what I find myself doing now is I spend more time probably managing people and processes, which is never fun, because when you set up a small business, you set it up because you love dealing with the customers, you like winning new business, you don't want to particularly deal with staff issues and drama and sickness and all sorts of things that come with us everyday people. But that's the reality of what happens. But at the same time, if your business is to grow, then you need the extra hands. You can't be everywhere at once. So it's about trying to get the best people that you can within it. All I say is trying to get good people with a really, really good business system.
And do you think the business now is at a point where it's scalable? Because you said before, if it's just you and another person, you know, the limiting factor is the number of pairs of hands and the number of hours in a day. Whereas once you start getting processes and frameworks in place, you can then start to replicate that across, you know, larger and larger. So what's your ambition about scaling the business up? Where would you like to get to?
Well, I think right now for us, it's about, there's two sort of stepping stones where we are. Right now, it's about stabilising ourselves as an estate agent, because we've only just started selling houses about a year ago. So it's to really grow in that market, because we're known for the rentals, we're not known for the selling. So it's to establish that business department. But in terms of longer term ambition, I've thought about different things. I've thought about opening another branch, possibly, maybe looking at the franchise route, because we have quite a good model, quite a unique model, as in going into shopping centres and setting up pods in shopping centres, because what we do here in the mall is very unique. So, and then everybody who comes across thinks, oh, this is an interesting idea. So we're thinking about a franchise, and we could literally go all over the UK and take the shopping model, the business, sort of the shopping centre model out, because then we sort of thought we'd take the business of the people. And we thought we could do that.
The shopping centre model, what you'd say, is the big difference. Obviously, there are a lot of estate agents out there, a lot of letting agents out there. Obviously, the digital landscape, the internet, has changed things enormously. And, you know, with models like Airbnb and those sorts of things being very available now. But you've said that one of the things you keep coming back to is this kiosk type approach. So what is it that's different about that that makes people come to you as opposed to doing everything on the internet?
I think with the shopping centre model that I put in place a few years ago, and we've upgraded it last year, I just think it's that unique appeal that you can be just in the mall doing what you normally do for a leisurely shop, and then you come across an estate agent, so you can also take care of your sort of property needs as well. So that sort of just gives us a massive point of difference. That is our unique selling point, if you like, because with the mall, we're exposed to pretty much half a million people every single week. So that's the biggest shop window that you could probably get in Luton. So that's very unique. But the online side of things also is massively important.
Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
If anyone has any thoughts or questions or observations around the difference between the digital business model and the physical business model, because my experience has been that actually a lot of things now happen online.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to hear that actually a physical kiosk in a shopping mall actually is proven to be the key difference for your business.
It definitely works, because I think people don't expect to see it there, and, you know, and property, you know, everyone touches property, whether you're a tenant, whether you're buying, whether you're selling, you know, there's everyone's got a need for housing. So for the reason, but the, I guess the idea behind the kiosk was, well, our client base is everyone, Joe Public, really. It's either you're buying, selling, renting, or, you know, so that was the reason why we decided to go into the mall, because potentially anyone could be a client. And it works really well, because people, like, they're already parked, they're relaxed, So they come in and they spend time. They don't have to go out of their way to come to the high street where all the agents are to see us. We're right there
it's
while
part
you're
of the flow.
Yeah, it's just part of your natural evening or your natural afternoon. So that was a big thing there. But the online thing has to run side by side because I recognise that the online space is, you know, where we all transact really. That's tough.
So are there any questions on the business setup part? I want to move on in a second to talk about the Luton property market.
Okay.
Are there any questions on setting up the business, or has everyone kind of understood that part and we can move on?
Yeah, question there? I want to ask, what are your relationship with other agency within the Luton here? Do you have any kind of collaboration or working in hand?
So before you answer that, I'll just repeat the question so they can hear it on for the radio. So the question was, what's your relationship with other agencies in Luton? Do you work together, or do you see each other as competition, or do you cooperate? So how does that work with other agencies?
I think in the beginning, I remember in the early years, I used to do a lot of networking and collaboration with other independents, not so much the national or the big brands, but the other independents, we would work together. So for example, if we had properties that we couldn't rent out for a reasonable length of time, we would network and say, well, can you put this on your books? And we'd make a fee arrangement between us. So basically we'd try and pull the power of two together and we'd have our own business arrangement. But the main thing is that we are seen to get the job done for the client. So in the beginning, I would do that with quite a few companies. But what I found is as the business grew and got stronger and stronger on its own feet, we do less of that now. We tend to service everything ourselves. But in the beginning, it was very good to work with two or three guys just like me back then who were doing their own thing, and that worked well.
What if you're not able to serve the customer, do you like charge the other?
If the other company finds
the house that the customer is looking for.
Yeah, we would have some sort of like split fee arrangement. So depending on who was bringing what side of the party together, so you'd have a split fee arrangement. So if they found the business for us, we'd split fees, and vice versa. So you'd set it up from the beginning, so everything was transparent, so you'd know it and exactly what you needed to do. The main thing was that everyone got to keep their client, and then we would just sort out the finances in the background. But we'd at least keep the business because the business is for the long term. So that'd be the main thing.
So let's move on to a slightly different area now, which is the Luton property market today. Mm-hmm. So we were talking earlier, obviously, you know, the airport's going through a big expansion.
Yeah.
There's very good rail networks there. But what's your view as to you know, the future for the Luton property market? What do you think is going to happen? What would you like to see happen?
I mean, I think, like you said, Luton's going through a massive transition with all the investment that's going on. From a property point of view, there's two sides to it. From a rental property point of view, it's driving the rents up higher and higher, because what's happening is with all the development that's going on, we're getting more and more overspill of people from London moving into Luton. Luton's always seen as that affordable next city to London, really. So that's driving the property prices up and bringing all the people from the south upwards, which is great. So that always works well for local investors. I think from a sales point of view, again, house prices on the selling side are on the rise. They're not rising as quickly as the rentals, but the house prices are going up. So that market is becoming more stable for Luton. Mm-hmm. It's getting more expensive, though, to buy into Luton as an investor. Before, it was very cheap, or relatively cheap compared to anywhere else, to buy a property here. Whereas now the market here is becoming challenging. The prices are going up. So it's helping. Everything's on the up.
And is your view that we're not asking for investment advice? Mm. Not going to hold you to this. Mm. But your view is that actually investing in property in Luton is quite a sensible thing to do, because obviously a lot of other places are very expensive indeed around this area.
Yeah, I'd say investing in Luton is a great idea. I mean, the returns on your money here, if you buy right, are sort of like 6%, 6-7% is what when the investors look at a return, they call it a yield, how much they're going to get back versus what they put in. And you're looking at about 6-7% in Luton, which is good. You can't get that sort of rate in the bank or anywhere at the moment. So it's a great place to put your money. Properties don't stick in Luton. A good property on the market today will be rented within a week, if it's priced right, it's clean, it's decent, it's at the right target market, within a week you've got money down and it's gone. So investing here is a pretty safe bet.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is anybody putting money to invest in property in Luton? No, not this moment in time. They're all students, so it's the wrong audience. But if you get money, that's the thing to do.
Okay, I want to know about the rate of return Luton market, Luton real estate market offers to its investors.
The rate of the return?
So just in case the mics didn't pick that up, the question was, can you talk us through more about the rate of return on property in the Luton market specifically? I think you said 6-7% is not a bad yield.
Yeah, that's a good yield. So what do you mean in terms of...
7% or 6%?
Yeah, about 6. It depends on how much you purchase the house for. But, you know, if you purchase a two-bedroom property now for 135,000, say, if you buy, you would be renting that property out for nothing less than 850 a month. So it depends on how much money you put into it. But you're looking at getting a return on your money of about 6-7% a month, which is a good investment return.
Do you mean it's in terms of renting?
Yes, in terms of renting. So when you buy a property, so then rent it out, the return that you get on your investment for the renting side, yeah.
Well, actually, I have to say, 135k, 850 a month. That's close to 8.5. That's quite.
If you can buy, cheap, I mean, that's the lower end of the purchase price. But you can still pick up a. Obviously, if you buy 135, the property probably won't be ready to go. You probably spend 10-15 grand to bring it to the standard. So by the time you've done all of that and put money in, you're looking at getting 6-7% out.
Very good.
Which is definitely.
I'll go and check my bank account. I'll see.
Then you can come and see me. You can come and see us.
I think there's about fiver in there, something like that. There was a question over there.
Why you choose to start your business in Luton, now in a bigger city?
Yeah, in London.
So that's a good question. Why did you choose to start your business in Luton as opposed to a bigger town or city?
Yeah, because I'm from London. I'm born and bred in London, and I didn't know much about Luton, to be honest, when I came here. And the reason we ended up in Luton was because we were looking for a property to buy, which is the reason why most customers end up here. We were looking for a property to buy for ourselves personally. And the house price market in London was just too expensive. You know, everything we saw, we were priced out or it was too small. So we literally, as a family, we literally just kept traveling down the M1 and got to Watford. Very nice, too expensive. Got to Hemel. Not great.
So you're going most classification, the medium classification of the...
So the question was, for your target market, and I think you mentioned before that you go for these accidental landlords, but typically would they be buying something which is in a kind of a lower socio-demographic group of housing, or do you go for a mid-tier or an upper tier? What do you find works best for you? Because, you know, are they buying very big houses or are they buying small...
Here in Leeton?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. It really depends, but I think the average investors tends to buy in, they're buying like 1-2 bedroom properties in the mid tier because those are the ones that you can buy relatively cheap and they rent very fast for a high value. So I'd say it's the middle tier that they go for.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think Luton is just a great spillover from London. It's half an hour from London, or depending on what part of London, but, you know, it's just half an hour from the northwest of London in the car. The train station is here. So naturally, the London market spills over. Most of the investors that we deal with, they tend to come from London because they realise that their money can go so much further in Luton.
Oh, that's interesting. So most of your client base are London-based and then buy Luton as opposed to being local people buying...
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of locals as well, but you find that a lot of the money comes in from London. Right. Because in London, you know, for what they'll buy in London, they'll buy two or three houses. For the one house they'll buy in London, they'll buy two or three houses here. So they'll spread their bets.
Spread the risk. Yeah. But also, I mean, if they're getting a yield of 6-7%, etc. I don't know what yields are like in London, but I'm guessing that's as good as anywhere you'll get.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me ask you a slightly different question. I'll come back to you guys in a second. You moved from being a sole trader to a limited company at some point. Why that change?
That was just more to do with the... a couple of things, but that was more to do with the accounts, the books, because it's when you're a limited company, you have more tax advantages. Mm-hmm. So that was more to do with just the general business structure.
So the audience and those folks who might know, what would be the advantages of moving from being a sole trader to a limited? In broad terms, I know you've got a business management degree, so I'm quite comfortable asking that question.
The benefits are, number one, when you're a limited company, it does give you a bit more of a trust factor out there with clients, and people tend to trade with you a lot easier.
So from a branding point of view, company can be better. So that's an interesting thought for everyone listening.
Yeah, but, from a branding point of view, from a trust point of view, people prefer to deal with limited companies. They feel there's a little bit more red risk there. So that was one reason. And then from an accounting point of view, obviously you have a lot more tax advantages and tax breaks. So in terms of buying things and doing things, there's a lot more tax benefits when you're set up as a limited company. Yes. You can take advantage of a lot more.
Because as a sole trader, you're taxed as an individual.
Yeah, as a person. Yeah.
As a limited company.
You're a business, an entity.
You can issue dividends and invest things. So it's much more tax efficient.
It is more tax efficient, and you can do different things with credit. You can get more things on credit. Yeah. So it's a little bit more real. You become a real establishment. A real establishment. Yeah.
Business Matters. Brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
Two questions in the audience, I think. So we'll go here first, please.
I just want to expand it on how see more from the business and marketing to this estate. Again, I want just to highlight the kind of courses you did there that qualify you to be an estate agent.
Okay.
Okay. So let me just repeat the question so we pick it up from the mic. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. So the question is the process you went through and the qualifications you had to get. I think actually also let's know the motivation as well. I know you mentioned it before, it was an interest, but actually it's quite a departure from what you were doing before. So what did you have to go through? What qualifications did you get? And what was your motivation for making the change from, you know, having a good job, you know, in there, London, through to doing the business you do today?
I think the motivation behind it was, for me, I was just generally very, very interested in property. I was interested in the property market, how it works, what people buy, how things sell. So I was interested in everything, the whole dynamics around it.
So let me just pull out a learning point for everybody there. It was a passion.
Yeah, passion.
So it was really, so actually, whatever business you want to start, make sure it's your passion.
I would say so. Yeah. I would say so. I mean, it doesn't always have to be your passion. Sometimes you can find passion in the numbers.
Yeah, of course.
But if you have a passion about something, it makes it a lot easier because it doesn't feel like such a hard task to learn. So for me, the passion was there. I've always been a people person. I've always been a salesperson. So for me, the two coming together, people and property, was a natural interest. In terms of the qualifications and the routes in, from when I left my day job, at that time, to be honest, you didn't need to have any official professional qualifications to be a letting agent. You didn't need to. You just needed to know about them. And to be fair, even now, you don't particularly need to have any professional academic qualifications. They're making it slightly different now in that we have to belong to certain industry bodies, which means we've got to do certain things. But more or less anyone, if you think you know what you're doing, which is the danger in this market, can open up tomorrow and say, I'm Joe Bloggs Property Limited and ID Property. But there's so many legal things behind it, and it's getting tighter now. You do have to be careful. So the route that I took is I went to a few of the industry bodies which do courses where you can literally just pay to get on their business basic courses for this market. So they'll have the how to set up a residential estate agency. They'll take you through their legal modules, their customer service modules, and you literally just complete all the modules. It's not compulsory, but that's what I did in order to understand the basics. And I also bought a business package. There was a company at the time, they're still around now actually, called South Court Property Management. And they actually sell a business package.
Right.
So you can buy into their business package, and that business package will take you from day one of setup to running a business and what to do.
So as a general point, did you find that quite a useful thing to do? So obviously a lot of that was kind of pre-packaged for you, and just you could kind of get on doing what you do best, which is dealing with
selling
and
managing your property. It was really handy because the whole business package itself came with it was like a toolkit.
Right.
So it came with templates, it came with examples of letters. It basically was the whole framework as to how to get from getting your first customer to running the business. And I bought into that, and I think that cost me something like £500, probably the best £500 I spent. And that really worked. And they had a helpline. They had a customer service helpline. So when you were dealing with customers or you were dealing with things in the business and you got stuck or you weren't sure what to do, you could call them. And to be honest, I think they themselves are just an estate. They were an estate agency themselves. And they decided to take their brain and their business model and put it into a manual.
Or as a franchise.
Yeah, same thing.
You could do. So is that definitely a thought for the future?
Definitely, definitely. Just taking your brain, your experience, and putting it into a manual and breaking it down and selling it.
So if there are any, I don't know, business studies students here in the room or listening who might want to come and give you a hand without a franchise model. That could be quite good. One or two nods, okay.
That'd be quite handy. So that's what I did.
Okay, lovely. And another question at the back.
Oh, you covered me.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
Did you read books about the real estate market and...
Magazines, lots of industry magazines. So I have lots of subscriptions that come to me from different parts of the industry, Estate Agency Today, there's so many.
Magazines, but not books.
Not so much books, they're more like magazines, journals, things that come out every single week or every single month that then give you the updates and the changes in the legislation. So more professional subscriptions.
Can the UK real estate market can have a slump like what happened in the US a few years ago?
Can we have a slump like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had one before. We're still in one.
We've had several.
I think we're still sort of in one. Yeah.
We've had several.
Yeah. But there's, I think, we can and we still sort of are coming out of a slum. But with property, even when it slums or goes down, you know, it never hits rock bottom. It still stays at a sort of, because everyone needs somewhere to live. So it would never sort of completely fall out completely, no.
What's interesting about this particular set of economic conditions is that previous slumps, so if you go back to 2007, if you go back to the 90s, if you go back to even 89, when there was a slump back then, it was very much linked to economic factors. Interesting, the economy now, as Vanessa just said, is still quite low. We're not growing very quickly.
Yeah.
But property as an asset class, particularly residential property, has grown way beyond the standard. So it is quite out of step with the general economy, I would say. Yeah. Not entirely sure what that means, but it is quite out of step.
I think property is always, even in the bad times, property is always a good place to put your money. You know, even if it loses value, which properties have lost value over the last sort of 10 years, it will generally come back up. Every 7 years, you tend to find that the figures should nearly double in your property investment. So generally, property is where people will put their money in the good or the bad times, because you will get that. If you're willing to sit tight for the longer term, then your investment will go back up and you will realise the equity.
But as a long-term asset.
It's got to be long-term. You've got to be looking at
3 or 6 months. You've got to think.
7 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, you. 7 to 10 years.
Fair enough. All right. So we've got time for...
Thing, please.
Yeah, well, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, well, what's your advice for someone that like to start this agency work in a developing country? Mm-hmm. And can all this business package be used for them?
So let me repeat the question. So what would your advice be to someone looking to set up an estate agency, particularly in an overseas market, a developing country market, and are there any packages available there? Can you comment on that?
It's a bit difficult. I think the business packages will give you they are good, and I think they'll give you the fundamentals, so the business basics. And then I guess it will be about applying those business basics to that particular country or that local market. So depending on where you're going, you'd have to look at the market itself, what the investments are there, what people buy, what people rent. But the business packages will give you that baseline, so it will tell you what you need to do, how you need to do it. But then you'll then have to study the local environment to be able to kind of align what you're doing with the market that you're planning to serve. So I'd say it'd be useful, but it just depends on the country.
Do your research, maybe.
Yeah, you'd have to research a lot.
Do your research.
Yeah, but it would tell you, it would give you the basics.
Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
Like, if I was to start VA today, it would be a lot harder, I think, than when I started it in 2007. You've got to look at the timing as well, because the market's getting more and more competitive. Mm-hmm. Back then it was competitive, but not as competitive as I am now. So you'd have to do your homework. You'd have to really look at the local market, the trends, who's out there, the pricing, what you need to set up, what you need to sustain, and then do a very sort of business plan, put a business plan together and sink or swim.
Sink or swim. So on that note, I'm afraid we've run out of time.
Wow.
So I need to pull us to a close. And I think I've kind of pulled three main lessons from talking to you today, Vanessa. So the first thing is, do a lot of reading and research and make sure you kind of know what you're talking about. The second is, there are some routes into market, such as the packages, which can be quite useful. But the last, I think this came across very clear, I think everyone would agree, the passion.
Yeah.
You know, this is clearly something which is very, very, very close to your heart. So I want to say, Vanessa, thank you very much for coming to talk to us today. Your passion comes across very, very clearly, and we really appreciate your time. Vanessa Afonje, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. Thank you.
For more information, visit radiolab.beds.ac.uk/businessmatters.